Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Getting It Done, and I'm your host, Dr. Dean. We're going to go back in time and hear some words from Minister Louis Fourcade when he spoke at Illinois University. We will not be listening to his whole speech because it would take more than the time we have allocated for the show. But he does forecast what is presently happening here in the United States. After that, we'll search for some more statements that he made and other presentations and see if he hit the nail right on the head. So without any further ado, let's listen to Brother Fourcade.
I told you earlier that when they got ready to bomb Gaddafi, he was a terrorist. When they got ready to bomb Noriega, he was a dope trafficker. They're getting ready for you. And so our young men are being treated as thugs, gangbangers, violent savages. Do you hear me? I know you think I'm just making this up. But brother, for nearly 3 years, they've had young gangbangers in Los Angeles and other places on television. You don't see the gangbangers saying nothing. You just see them kneeling down in the street with their hands behind their back and the press saying, "We're taking back the streets." Who's promoting the gang violence? You think they just killing each other over color? Where did these gangbangers get a Uzi? An automatic weapon made in Israel and an AK-47 made in China and a street sweeper, a shotgun that fires 12 rounds in nearly 6 seconds. Where did they get these kind of weapons? Somebody's giving it to them. And as long as they kill each other, it's all right. But the news every day, gang violence. Gang violence. Washington, D.C., so many hundred dead, and you show bodies laying out in the streets. And this is creating in the mind of American people to live with a ruin our country. And there's something that can be done. And all the politicians are talking law and order. Look at it. Then the police are saying they don't have enough firepower. So the National Guard is moving in to certain cities now. Brothers and sisters, Pharaoh brought his army out against the children of Israel. And America is planning to do the same for you. And we don't have much time. They see Farrakhan as public enemy number one. And all the stuff that they're putting in the paper. Farrakhan this, Farrakhan that, Farrakhan this. So Farrakhan decided, I'd like to let the American people see me. So in 1 week's time, I was on several major television shows. And many whites have written me letters, some of them priests, thanking me for the way I handled the ignorance of their people. Look, if you go back over the Donahue show, a woman stands up and says, "Just look at you, standing there, leering at us, looking down at us." What was wrong with that poor woman. You know what was wrong with her? A black man. Highly intelligent. Not allowing their ignorance to get me in a shouting match with foolish people. She could not understand a black man speaking with authority who wasn't scratching when he wasn't itching. Another white woman said, yes, these jobs. I bet you if a white man and a black man went to get it up, the black man would get the job first. Listen, wait. Here is a white woman in pain over affirmative action. Affirmative action was a remedy given by the court to remedy and offset some of the evil that the country has done to black people. But white people can't take even a little pay to see you get any measure of justice. So this woman cries out, Mr. Donahue, he says, why do you keep saying if? Get to the bottom line. You know you don't agree. Why do you say if? Why are you trying to mollify us? I said, out of respect for the minds of your listeners. I wasn't talking down to him. See, he would like for me to be dogmatic and not intelligent. When you are dogmatic, you go to the bottom line. That doesn't allow people to travel with you. So in the process of reasoning, you always set up an hypothesis. Why? You know the answer, but you're not. It's not your answer that you're trying to get. You're trying to lead a mind to a conclusion. So you say, if side angle side of this triangle is equal to side angle side of triangle B, then the triangle, then conclusion, triangles are said to be what? Congruent. What is that? Process. Reasoning. So when you're dealing with people's minds, because you know the answer, don't assume that everybody knows it. You have to, if you respect human beings, gently lead their minds so that we all come to a similar conclusion. That is if you're a teacher. That's my job. Teaching. So Donahue said, get to the bottom line so that I can close off many minds. No, I'm not going to do that, Mr. Donahue. The point is, the American people have to see the man and hear the man for themselves. Then they can make the judgment. Brothers and sisters, we're in trouble. And Bush is trying to get rid of Farrakhan. And, you know, to the Jewish people that are in the house, there's nothing that I can say to you that would make you think that I don't have evil in my heart against your people. Nothing. I'm not trying to push you in another, but I know there's one. I know that there's an oven for us all. The sun is setting. You're not going to mistreat me and get away with it.
Right.
No, just listen. I'm not before you of myself. If I am, then you don't have anything to worry about. But if I'm backed by God, you better leave me alone. Listen, are you threatening us? You can take it like that. It is a threat. Because death is hanging over your head too. That's right. And you may not like it, but I'm standing between you and death. And for you to call for my death and tell Jewish children that I'm another Hitler, that all I want to do is kill Jews. Ridiculous. You say that I'm scapegoating Jews, while in reality, Jewish leaders are scapegoating me to you, making the young Jews in every college campus that I go to turn out to oppose Louis Farrakhan. That's all right with me. But remember this now. Remember this. You have not a good record with the prophets. You don't have a good record. No, I'm not laughing. I think this is serious. I'm not a prophet. I'm not a prophet. But I am a man with a message in my mouth for the deliverance of my people. And if you kill me or attempt to kill me because I speak truth to my people, how will that put you? How will that stand you in the stead or in the eyes of God? You kill everybody that you don't like. Martin is gone. Malcolm is gone. Marcus Garvey gone. Everybody you don't like. You either get one of us to do it or you do it yourself. And literally, white folks are talking about there's a bullet for that prayer. No. You haven't got a gun big enough. Listen. I'm in the midst. And I'm not running from you. Because I know if you kill me, I'll be the last one that you kill.
Maybe all over here.
Let me tell you something. There is a God who is plaguing this country right now, even as Jehovah plagued Egypt. Listen good, because you're going to need it. I'm a warner. You can take it or leave it alone. I don't have no other country to go to but America. I live here. I grew up here. I would like to see America save herself. But if you think, if this government thinks it can get away with killing the people of God, you will get everything that you put on us and then some. And you are the generation that is at risk. You young whites. Yours is the generation. You can escape it, or the full wrath of God can come down on this generation. Prepare slaughter for the children for the iniquities of their fathers. But these children did not kill us. They are the beneficiaries of their father's evil. Now what you've got to do is recognize that as you are the beneficiaries of your father's evil, these have been destroyed because of that. And if the present generation of whites will do what the West Germans, East Germans are doing for the Jews. Let me read this to you as I leave you. New York Times, April the 13th, East Berlin statement of apology to Israel. East Berlin, listen to what they said. I'm only going to read some of it. We ask the Jews of the world to forgive us. We ask the people of Israel to forgive us for the hypocrisy and hostility of official East German policies toward Israel and for the persecution and the degradation of Jewish citizens after 1945 in our country. We declare our willingness to contribute as much as possible to the healing of mental and physical sufferings of survivors and to provide just compensation for material losses. Isn't that a wonderful statement by the East Germans for their evil against the Jews? Let's give them a hand. Now look, America recognizes she did wrong to the Japanese.
Right.
She took Japanese Americans and put them in concentration camps and confiscated their property for 4 years. Come on. And the U.S. Congress has voted to do what? Pay what? Say it loud.
Reparations.
Reparation means do something to repair the debt. I close. Let me read this over and change the word Jews. I'm putting it in white folks' mouth. If America could have the courage to say what the Germans said, listen. We ask the blacks of the world to forgive us. How many of you got the courage to ask black people to forgive you for killing them wholesale in Africa, in the Isles of the Pacific, for killing the Native Americans, and for bringing our fathers into slavery, into the Black Holocaust? How many are willing to ask us to forgive them? Listen, and we ask especially the black people of America to forgive us for the hypocrisy. See, we want integration. Lie. This is all hypocrisy. No real meaning to it. We ask you to forgive us for the hypocrisy and the hostility of official United States government policies toward black people. Because it was government official policy to kill all our leaders. Did you know that? Government policy. Yeah. And for the persecution and degradation of our so-called black citizens. We declare our willingness to contribute as much as possible to the healing of mental and physical suffering of the survivors. That's you, black people. And to provide just compensation for material loss. Now, what would that compensation be? Let's see if we can figure it out. 100 million lives lost in the Middle Passage. Figure that out. 300 years of work for nothing. Figure that out. Turning a people inside out. Robbing us of name, language, culture, religion, God. And making us so sick mentally that after they struck down involuntary slavery, we became voluntary slaves. Figure that out. Figure that out. we died in the American Revolution for America's freedom. Figure that out. Figure it up that we died in the War of 1812 and in the Civil War. 400,000 black soldiers were in the blue and the gray on the side of the North and the South fighting to preserve a union. It didn't give a damn about us. Figure that out. Figure it out. Figure out the lynchings and the night riots. Figure it out. Figure up the land that we got and the land that was taken from us. Figure it out. Figure out World War I. We died and they crushed Germany and it never gave us nothing. World War II, we died in Normandy, in Sicily, in Palermo, in North Africa. We died to be Germany. We died in Guadalcanal, in the Philippines, in Okinawa. We died at Pearl Harbor. Figure it out. And after the war is over, you rebuilt Germany and you rebuilt Japan. And the black man is here in America, not living in a decent house without a job, his children destroyed. Figure it out. We fought in Vietnam and in Korea. Figure it out. What is Martin Luther King's life worth to us? Figure it out. What are our leaders' lives in black organizations destroyed by government policy? Figure it out. And when you lay down what you owe us the whole damn country. And we're not asking for that. We're not asking for that. All we're asking is for justice. And that's the time. If you don't give us justice, you may lose it all. So, black students, you get this. And you stop all this partying and foolishness. And you get your act together. As of tonight, you put down that reefer. And you put down that crack. And those pills and that drug. And get your head screwed on right. You cannot live today with a half-high head. You gotta be sober to see the tricks that's going down to rob you of your future, black man and woman. Clean it up. Don't come to Illinois State trying to make a white university relevant to black people. That's wasting valuable time. Come here and extract the knowledge and then go back and use it to build your community, build your people, build for yourself. Don't you come out of here looking for a job. Come out with a mind to try and create a job. Do you hear me, brothers and sisters? Stop all this talk about I am an alpha. I am an omega. I am a kappa. I am a sigma. I am a delta. I am an AKA. What is that but more Greek letters? Jesus said, I am alpha and omega, the beginning and the ending, saith the Lord. Come together. Stop all this talk about I'm a Baptist, I'm a Methodist, I'm an Episcopalian, I'm a Jehovah's Witness, I'm a church of God in Christ. I'm holiness. I'm Pentecostal. Stop that kind of talk. Jesus never spoke like that. Speak as he spoke. He was baptized, but he wasn't a Baptist. Talk to me. He never said he was a Methodist. He said, I'm the way, the truth, and the life. He never said, I'm a Catholic. He said, I am the light of the world, meaning I'm universal. He never said, I'm a Jehovah's Witness, but it's a fact he was the witness of Jehovah. No question about it. He never said, I'm holy. He said, if the first truth is holy, then the lump is also holy. He never said, I'm Pentecostal, but without Jesus appearing before the disciples, there wouldn't be any day of Pentecost. These are your denominations. These are your divisions. Prophet Muhammad never said he was Sunni. He gave us the Sunnah. He never said he was Shia, but through his daughter Fatima, he had Hussein and Hassan. Now, come on. He never said he was Hanafi, Sufi. That's your stuff. Be what he was. He was a Muslim. He submitted his will to do the will of God. Be what Jesus was. Jesus never said, I'm a Christian. Not one time. He never called his disciples Christians. Did you know that? They were called Christians at Antioch by the enemies of Jesus. Jesus said, not my will, but thy will be done. He submitted his will to do the will of God. Come on. So let us do that. Stop all this division. And let's come together as a family. And love each other. And respect each other. And work for the good of each other. Uphold each other in right. Huh? And above all, respect and protect and honor your women. Respect, protect, and honor your women. And to the white students, if you will sit down with these black students in an honest dialogue without hypocrisy, maybe tomorrow you might make better sense than tonight. Maybe after hearing what Farrakhan had to say, it didn't necessarily drive you further apart. You already apart. Maybe it gave you something, a basis upon which to start an honest dialogue. And through dialogue, maybe you might learn to respect each other. And as I said on the Donahue Show, my students, think about it. You didn't come in a vacuum. You study biology and you learn Mendel's law. You know that dark skin is dominant and light skin is receptive. No, this ain't no black supremacy. Just that the truth is supreme. You know that dark eyes are dominant and light eyes are recessive. And you teach that you can get the recessive from the dominant. But you can't get the dominant from the recessive. So two white people can only produce white. You can never produce yellow. It's just not in your genetic makeup to do that. It's a biological, mathematical impossibility. But the black man can produce from jet black people and albino with blonde hair and light eyes, showing you that in us is the whole human family of the earth. And from the black man, whom the Honorable Elijah Muhammad called the original people of the earth. That's why you're black. You're not black because you're cursed. You're black because you are the original light in the universe. Yes. Yes. You see, I can't believe it. And I thought I was black and ugly. No, no. You're black and beautiful because you are original. Just be yourself. Don't try to be white people. Be you. Fall in love with you. Jesus said, love your neighbor as who? Yourself. So you can't love your neighbor if you don't love yourself. So fall in love with yourself, and maybe you'll be able to love your neighbor. And since you don't live in nobody else's neighborhood, I guess your neighbor looks just like yourself. Well, thank you for inviting me. I know I stayed all night, but may God bless you all. Thank you, Illinois State University. Thank you, black students. May Allah bless you as I greet you in peace. Assalamu alaikum.
That was a straightforward presentation by the great Minister Louis Farrakhan, who told and explained what was going to happen to black men in the killings that are presently happening. Said who was going to do it, the generation at that particular time. Ain't no old people killing black people right now. The younger people that are policemen, if they are police, they haven't been put into retirement. They are still the ones who are doing the killing. Older ones, they don't put them outside to do anything. They work inside, the old ones. But it's therefore the younger ones are the ones that he was talking about way back then. That was almost 20 years ago. That presentation took place. And he gave some dynamic information that was worth the time to listen to. And furthermore, we're going to listen to him later on talk some more about as he faces this age. But before we do that, I'd like to talk about Paul Willis's band, CD called Hearts Shine, which has seven tunes with just one vocalist. He told me to say that, but actually Paul does some singing on some of them, or most of the songs that he wrote. By the way, he wrote them, he arranged them, and he sang most of them, except for the one that I sang, which is called Most of All. The disc costs $15. If you're interested in purchasing one, you contact Paul, PCWILUSC, at gmail.com. And when you do that, give him your phone number, your name, and your email address. And that's a way you can do that. Now, I think we have enough time to hear some more stuff. I think that is this fantastic man will internalize and be able to express to you in a dynamic fashion. Hopefully we won't be interrupted by some...
The order, the kids, a dog bus, and Biggie, and King.
Well, let's see if we can get past
really.
All right.
It's 40 in the morning. Holy shit. 10:15. 20th anniversary of the Million Man March and Day of Atonement.
I remember 20 years ago, I was fighting to come to D.C. and be a part of that Million Man March. I remember the 10-year anniversary as well. You know, one of the things I always admired about you, you know, even to this day, one of the things from your past that a lot of people that's attached to Minister Louis Farrakhan's legacy is your relationship, and you spoke about him earlier with Brother Malcolm, you know, and a lot of folks, I even asked folks today, what would you have me ask him if you had a chance to talk? And the majority of people ask about your relationship with the Brother Malcolm. And what's happened since? People don't really know what happened since his death and your relationship with his family. They didn't see the Mike Wallace interview. You know, they didn't know about you meeting with Betty Shabazz. Can you clarify?
Well, first, Brother Malcolm was my mentor. I never met a more disciplined man. I was very fortunate to have him as my teacher. He was the greatest help of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. I would have given my life to protect his life because of my deep love for Elijah Muhammad and his being his top student. Unfortunately, there would come a time when he would break ranks with the nation, break ranks with the Honorable Elijah Muhammad over an aspect of Mr. Muhammad's personal life. Before that happened, if you remember when John Kennedy was murdered, I don't know whether you know this, but Elijah Muhammad instructed all his ministers not to say anything about the assassination of President Kennedy. Brother Malcolm was speaking at the Manhattan Center, and he got through the lecture perfectly, but he had a question and answer period, and a man from the New York Times asked him a question concerning President Kennedy. And he made a statement that was true. It was the case of the chickens coming home to roost. However, he disobeyed the direction of the teacher. The newspapers said, Malcolm rejoices, in words, over the assassination of Kennedy. Now, we have many believers in prisons all over America under white Catholic guards. Persecution began because they loved Kennedy. Malcolm was exposing Kennedy, not telling lies, telling truth. But that violation of the instructions of his teacher caused the teacher to silence him. During that period of silence, I was invited to New York to speak on a particular Sunday as other ministers were coming in. And Malcolm came and met me and took me to his home on 2311 97th Street. And during the dinner, Betty brought the dinner in. Malcolm began to tell me about my teacher's personal life. And after he finished, he said, "Now, brother, I could get these sisters on the telephone and trick them and make them tell you that what I'm telling you is true. I said, no, brother, you don't have to do that. When he took me back to the airport, he said to me, brother, now I don't want you to tell anybody what I've told you. I said, no, I'm not going to tell anybody but the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And I saw his shoulder jump. I went back to Boston. I couldn't sleep. Because sometimes when you learn information that you didn't know that has a tendency to shake your faith some,
yeah,
it keeps you up. I could not sleep that night, and 5 o'clock the next morning, if that's our time for prayer, Brother Malcolm called me. He said, Brother Lewis, I want you to delay the letter that you're going to write to give me a chance to write a letter to explain what I said and why. I said, brother, it's going to take me some time to get my head together to write such a letter. So if you can get your letter off in that time, fine. I do not want to be put in between two powerful men. He said, well, there's only one powerful man. I said, I'm aware of that, but I'm also aware that your relationship with me and mine, with you and him, would be troubled. Malcolm wrote his letter, and mine came after his letter. And he was summoned to Arizona to answer his teacher. Now, that was a very difficult period in the nation's life because most of you have girlfriends that you don't legitimize them as wives. Not, I'm not talking to you personally, but most men have women on the side, but they don't accept the responsibility of procreation. Elijah Muhammad married these women. They produced for him children. Now, what you don't know, and you're going to have to face it, women are outnumbering men today from 7 to 11 to 1. And women today lose as a commodity because there's more than the demand. The demand is on the man because he's less, she's more in terms of numbers. So women are plagued. But one day, we're going to have to think over what polygamy is. It's not the best solution, but when Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, went to war, many men lost their lives and left their wives and their children sometimes as often. So the Quran permitted the Muslim male to have up to 4 wives. Under that circumstance, Elijah Muhammad taught us against fornication and adultery. So naturally, if he is taking wives, all of us that follow him that had girlfriends before we met him, it might trigger us to go back into fornication and adultery. I defended Elijah Muhammad. I did not defend Malcolm. I was angry with him because Elijah Muhammad took Brother Malcolm from prison. A brilliant man, potentially, but doing criminal things. And when Elijah Muhammad, when he became a follower of Elijah Muhammad and came out of prison, I know the NAACP wouldn't use him, nor would the Urban League, because Malcolm only had an eighth grade education. But after Elijah Muhammad taught him, that man became a giant. So it would seem to me that regardless to what you felt about your teacher, why would you try to destroy a movement that gave you life because your teacher disciplines you? And that's where we fell out.
Yeah. But those actions question his faith, all right?
Yes.
Okay.
And naturally, then, when your faith is shaken, you do what you think you should do. But most of the people don't know that Malcolm tried to get back into the nation before he was assassinated.
Right.
So why would he come back? If your faith was broken, why would you come back? It's because he realized the nation made Malcolm. And Malcolm helped to make the nation. And 1 year, 2 years outside of the nation, he was wandering, not quite sure where he wanted to go. He was a black nationalist, and then he became an Orthodox Muslim. We fell out. And I can't take that back because he taught me how to defend my teacher. And I went to him and showed him what I knew and found in the Quran about the domestic life of my teacher. And Malcolm said to me, "I already know that, brother. You can't handle that. I'll handle that." Fine. But he mishandled it. And he made the teacher to look bad when he could have defended the teacher just by using the knowledge of the Quran. So, unfortunately, it led to a back and forth. Like a husband and wife break apart, the children are watching a drama. And sometimes the drama gets so tense that one parent will attack another parent to get the children on their side and vice versa. That's the decision that I had to make over a man that inspired my Islamic life and the teacher of my Islamic life. I could not follow Brother Malcolm. I had to follow the teacher who taught us both. Time and circumstances now brought my brother to an assassination. There's a hell of a climate. You can't leave the FBI out of this. You can't leave the U.S. government out of this. They plotted to divide Malcolm from his teacher and create the circumstances that led to his assassination. And in the Freedom of Information Act, you can find all of this that the government was involved in. Malcolm went to Egypt and was poisoned in Egypt. We were not there when he went to France, and France wouldn't let him in. He took the money of de Gaulle, with that had de Gaulle's picture on it, and threw it on the ground. He knew that de Gaulle did not want him assassinated on French soil. We're not over there. It's bigger than the Nation of Islam. We had differences, yes. And some from the nation were charged with killing him and did 26 years to life, and they were innocent. The one that was guilty did the time, and then he came out and he named all those who were involved in that action with himself. These are records that you can get there in the court with Kunstler and others. Now, I want to say this in closing this, you know. Betty, of course, and I, we were at odds. But then the FBI came to my door and told me that we're going to announce somebody is trying to assassinate you, Farrakhan, and we're going to make the announcement at 11 o'clock or something. When the announcement came out, they said it was Kabila Shabazz paid some little white boy a little bit of money, and he was to assassinate Louis Farrakhan. Now, these are things you can get. It's public record.
Yeah.
I didn't let the FBI put that mess over on me and on us. We had a press conference, and I took the side of Kabila and Betty that they were set up to create a problem between the nationalist community and the Nation of Islam. So Betty and I then stood together, and at the Apollo Theater, we raised money to help Kabila out of that situation, and finally the government dropped the case. And now they're not going to tell you what Farrakhan did to start to bridge that gap. That night at the Apollo Theater, I used the term Brother Malcolm, and Betty said, I hope that you will continue to see him as Brother Malcolm, something like that. And when you hear me talk, mention his name, I say Brother Malcolm. Time heals wounds. There are some wounds that time won't heal, but I know that time will heal this wound, because now there's Kabila, there's Alyosha, there's the twins. That's a beautiful family. And you think about Malik Shabazz or Malcolm Shabazz, the only male member that represents Malcolm X, killed in Mexico. The FBI arrested that brother because he was going to Iran to a conference. The government has never stopped trying to harm both the nation and the Shabazz family. So today, I don't say that we're friends, but I do say that we're better than we were 20 years ago. And I want to say to all of you who think that Farrakhan did something to murder Malcolm or was a part of it, don't you know that as much as this enemy hates me, that if they had any evidence that I was a part of a conspiracy to murder Brother Malcolm, I wouldn't be here with this brother now. I'd be in some prison cell, and they wouldn't have to be afraid of the truth out of my mouth because they would have silenced me behind prison bars. So, you know, I had nothing to do with that, and I would hope that you would be intelligent enough to know that the enemy is still working. Today, Louis Farrakhan is the voice that Malcolm was. Do you think they don't want me silenced? Well, soon it'll be my turn because they're trying to find some way to arrest me or have some silly person think that they should kill me. And that's out there, too.
Mm-hmm. You receive death threats?
Well, if I did, I don't know it. Mm-hmm. It's saying that the government dropped the case before the Apollo. Yes, they did. That's what made the Apollo so strong. But I mentioned that it was after the Apollo. No, I didn't say that they stopped it after the Apollo. They stopped it, period. That's all. It's a matter of fact. Well, why did the government back out? If they thought they had something, why didn't they continue? See, because we didn't play into the plot. And that's why they lost. So I'm saying this to you, brother. It's a question that I don't mind answering, you know. But no matter what mistake I believe Malcolm made, he died that I might live. Because he made a mistake that I learned from. When I split with Wallace D. Muhammad, you never heard me say one negative word about that man. Because they were the institution. I was just an individual. But Allah has made me an institution now. So, in the end, I'll be the winner. I don't care what the government says. I'm the winner now, and I'll be the winner in the end. And you know what? I call him Brother Malcolm because even though he's dead, he's bringing more people to Islam in death than some of these living ones cannot do. And the thing that has made Malcolm, it's not an accident. Did you ever read the 11 daily newspapers after Brother Malcolm was assassinated?
No, I didn't read them.
Did you know that every paper in New York rejoiced at the murder of Brother Malcolm? Go back and look. They tried to make a movie on Brother Malcolm, and members of the Jewish community would not finance it or let it come out. Did you know that Brother Malcolm was by the ABL the number one anti-Semite when he was killed? Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
Did you know that that's what I am now to them? Do they love me? I'm asking you a question. Why don't they love me? Because I exposed them. Malcolm exposed them as the architects of all the civil rights organizations. They were behind them, giving them money. And you know what the theme was? Non-economic liberalism. That none of these organizations, CORE, SNCC, NAACP, could involve themselves in economic development, because economic development would take money out of the hands of the Jewish people that funded civil rights. Now, you've got to on today. Don't be no surface people. But we are the winners.
It's 4 in the morning. Only
for J45.
I think that's the conclusion
of another segment of listening to something that most people have a question about. And many people had thought that Malcolm was killed at the behest of Minister Farrakhan. I just found out that I didn't know that Malcolm was his teacher. And that's very, very interesting, and it would be very difficult for him to want to kill his own teacher. That closeness, that Malcolm did do some, made some bad mistakes, but they were honestly bad mistakes. They weren't something that he did just to be doing something. He did it because he thought he was right in doing it. And so that is, I wanted to give you an opportunity to hear Brother Farrakhan, because his deep thinking and expressions of thought are so enormous. They're so huge to the point where, you know, you have to really listen closely to what he is saying and how he says it and how he expresses himself with the level of sincerity he has about what he was talking about. And you can see some of the things that he forecast that are going on right now in terms of black brothers being killed. This has been going on for a long time, way even before Emmett Till, black men have, and black women have been killed by either their slave masters at that particular time or just white men in general. And today it has gotten so bad that white women have gone out of their way to hurt black men. You know, and blaming black men for things that they really didn't do. You can see that throughout history, to save their own selves, they did that. But here we are. This coming Friday, I'm now back in South Carolina. And it took me 8 hours to get here from last night from Florida. I'm very tired. I had a long trip, and I guess that today I spent a lot of time getting things done that I needed to do. But more importantly, sometimes you say, well, you're too tired to do the show. No, I'm never too tired to research and provide you, the listener, with an opportunity to find out about things that you really didn't know, and so forth. I see the need for us to share information about things that you have questions about. And so my research today was on the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and details of his stories last about his relationship with Malcolm X, and previous to that, his discussion of white supremacy and about how black people were becoming outnumbering white people in this country, and to the point where the voting would make a big difference. And so the killing of black men is not just something that's being done happenstance. It's a big plan, and it's been going on for some time. And you know, there's a lot of ways to kill somebody. You can kill somebody physically. You can also kill them emotionally, and you can kill them in so many different ways. And you can watch the person just die inside and outside from both the physical and the emotional or mental kinds of disparity. I have a question for the listeners out there. What is the difference between love and hate? And why would somebody want to marry somebody who they don't respect? So, beyond that, this has been Getting It Done. and your host, Dr. Walter Dean. Once again, this coming Friday, I will be my pleasure to provide you with information on this show. Hopefully, this show can go on, but I'm stopping it right now. So you have a nice week, y'all, and may the good Lord smile upon you and provide you with all the substance necessary for you to see the truth, because the truth will set you free. Have a good day.